Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Gobesky Wallace Report. I'm Adam Gobesky.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Please welcome our three special guests today. Please welcome.
Can't just call them special.
Please welcome.
What is this, the sci-fi shuffle?
Our three bloody guests today.
No, you can do better than that.
Please welcome.
There is one clear answer here.
Our three Mormon guests today.
There you go.
We've got Paul Wilcox, although I'm going to call him Milo.
Well, I'll remind you of that later.
And Doug Gobesky, who I am also going to call Milo.
No, only one Milo.
That's not what Michael Morbius does. He names
only
everybody
one
Milo.
At a time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I have to
wait for Paul to die. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Well, leave and presumably for die.
Do you mean Milo?
Okay, I guess just Doug.
Hey.
And Kevin Fredvogue.
Hello. Excited to be here.
And as I'm sure you can tell, we are talking about the 77th installment on the Merry Marvel Movie March. It is the one, the only, Morbius!
Pew, 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 pew.
This is an April 1st, 2022 release. And I double-checked. It really was an April 1st, 2022 release. Morbius is, of course, the story of one Dennis Morbius, who is one of the few who lives on a planet called, let's say, Altair 6. And he lives there with his daughter and a crew of passing space people, space pilots, whatever. They arrive on the planet and then they discover that, oh, maybe there is some sort of crazy monster at loose. And so they have to stop it. And Dennis Morbius is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Monster? What do you mean? Go talk to my daughter, Martine, let's call her, and my robot friend, Milo. And I fell asleep, so I don't know what happened next. The end.
I don't know that we watched the same movie.
Well, like I said, I fell asleep partway through, so I don't know what happened after that.
So we literally didn't watch the same movie. In that one of us didn't watch the movie.
How much of a movie do you have to watch to say you've watched the movie?
It's a great question.
Both post-credit scenes? Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So if you hit 51%, not good enough?
Not good enough.
What if it's the end 51%?
Still not good enough.
All right.
What about credits?
You don't need to watch the credits.
I only watch the credits.
It's the most important part.
We need to know who's responsible for Morbius.
That description was for Charlie.
Oh, was it?
It was.
My best guess was that. Is that Lost in Space? What are you talking about?
That's Forbidden Planet.
That was Forbidden Planet.
It was for Doug.
Oh, there you go.
But do you know why I decided to do that?
No.
Because the guy living on the planet is named Dr. Morbius.
Oh.
Supposedly, this is not an intentional homage. And because it's Roy Thomas, the comic book creator who created Morbius, he would definitely fess up if it was intentional. So, yeah, it seems to be genuinely just not a conscious move.
It's a good name.
It is, I'm told. I feel like all my knowledge of Morbius is tainted by Forbidden Planet and this comic book character. And now movie, the most successful movie of all time, of all of human history, forward or backward. We did it. We peaked.
Finally. Been waiting.
Okay, well, if that's not the movie that y'all watched, someone should tell me what you did watch. Maybe Charlie, in three sentences or less. Give us the TV Guide synopsis. Make us want to watch this movie as if we hadn't watched it, because I assume everyone here has watched it.
Jared Leto and Matt Smith become vampires and fight each other, punch each other with bats. That's what would make me want to watch this.
You left out a very crucial part. What is going to get people to watch this movie beyond just that?
Because it won literally every Oscar that year, and it's the highest grossing film of all time.
No. You just preface whatever you said with, in this Marvel Comics adaptation, comma.
That's true. What did it say? Is that what it said at the beginning of the movie? It wasn't like a Marvel movie, but it was like...
In association with Marvel Pictures.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I feel like I don't even need to ask this because I know that the movie made $42 trillion at the box office. But had you seen this before? Were you part of the $42 trillion, Doug?
I mean, I've seen it before, but I watched it on Netflix, so...
I'm sure they get some cut.
Okay.
Did anyone do the math on how many times every human would have to go see Morbius in the theater?
Doing the math is a Charlie thing, so...
Well, how much is a ticket?
We could call it $10 to be just simple. $10, with the math.
Okay. Yeah.
Easy. So 100 billion if every one person watched it. What were we trying to get to? 50 trillion?
42 trillion only. Only.
Thousands of times. Am I right on that?
You sure?
No, you're right. 100. You're right. 500. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 500.
A much more reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. And obviously, that's an average.
That's like twice a day for less than a year, guys.
I mean, I remember the lines, don't you?
I do not. To answer the question, I had not seen this prior to last night.
Did they not construct new Cineplexes in your neighborhood to help deal with the demand?
I lived through the Morbius lines so that you don't have to.
Let me tell you about Morbin Mania.
I also had not seen it, and I guess the only vaguely interesting thing to say is that it seems like the sort of movie I probably would have watched had it not been coming up, like when it came onto Netflix. Not in the theater, but I think I would have been a little bit curious to watch it.
I'm glad that I spoil things for you by forcing you to watch movies. You're like, I'm not going to watch that now. I'm going to have to watch it eventually. I don't want to have to see it twice. I had seen the movie before. I did not see it in theaters somehow. So I guess, yeah, there's at least three people who must have seen the movie 1,000 times to compensate for us. But I did find the Blu-ray in a bargain bin at Zia. And I was like, you know what? Let's do it. And so we watched it. That would have been around, I think, October 2022, something like that. I have a vague memory that it was like a Halloween time thing. So it felt appropriate. And then watched again just now.
How do you define bargain when it comes to this particular movie?
I don't want to say because y'all make fun of me. No, I think it was $8, which isn't like a huge bargain, but I was like, that's basically the cost of two movie tickets.
Yeah,
no, Brianne, so yeah.
I mean, I was eyeing it in Target for $40.
40?
4-0? 4K version, you know, but it was
$40. Wow. Oh, right. Remember? I remember. You know, I do remember this now. Yeah. Where you were going to do it for the bit, and then you saw the price, and you were like,
yeah.
I was like, goodness.
I'll do 20 for the bit, but 40?
I think you bought Bell instead or something like that.
Yes, I did. I did. I still have to watch that. I have a tendency to buy things when I'm on vacation and then just like put them on a shelf forever.
That is the point of vacation.
Yeah, I guess so.
You have to support other economies.
Gotta flow that money through Target, you know.
That's right.
Trickle it through the local economy.
The local mom and pop shop, Target.
Trying to send this back to Minnesota.
Does this mean you haven't seen it, Paul?
No, I had not really thought
about
it.
He had his chance.
The opportunity came and
went. It was the $40 like release week 4K Blu-ray or nothing for me.
So I don't remember how much exactly we've talked about this, but in case we have, the basic upshot is that Sony holds the rights to Spider-Man and Spider-Man-related characters. Marvel Studios holds the rights to most everything else. Fox used to obviously hold like X-Men and Fantastic Four rights, but then Disney ate them. So Sony is like, all right, well, we see that the MCU is making all the money. Remember, this is still like 2021, 22, when the MCU still appeared to be making all the money, even though the pandemic had thrown things into disarray. So they said, okay, well, we have the rights to these various Spider-Man characters and related characters. We can make movies based on them, and people will go see them because we at Sony have learned nothing from the early 2000s. Of that stable of characters, and of the ones that so far have had movies either released or announced, Morbius probably makes the most sense as an independent standalone film not associated with Spider-Man. As far as the comic books go, who here has heard of the 50s book Seduction of the Innocent?
Nope.
Uh-uh.
All right. This is the book that basically said, written by a psychiatrist. Wait,
what publisher?
I have no idea.
DC Comics, is it?
No, this is an actual book.
Oh, sorry.
We don't read those here.
Yeah, I forgot those existed.
I think I saw a copy of Curious Books in East Lansing once, but here nor there. Seduction of the Innocent was a book by a psychiatrist in the 50s that basically said comic books are the reason for society's ills. And they were attacking particular like horror comic books like EC and whatnot.
Oh, okay. I do think I've heard of this now. Okay.
Like, I believe it led to hearings in Congress.
And the Comics Code Authority.
And that is why I bring this up, because it did lead to the Comics Code Authority, which was basically the comic book companies pledging to basically clean up their act, quote unquote, so that Congress didn't have to pass any laws or do it for them. One of the restrictions of the Comics Code, and a partial result of like the 50s horror comics and stuff, that was that things such as werewolves, vampires, zombies, any sort of horror figures couldn't be depicted in comic books. Side note here, at one point this caused issues briefly, so the story goes, because one of the people who worked on Marvel Comics in the early 70s is named Marv Wolfman. and the Wolfman being a horror figure, there apparently was some discussion about whether or not he could be credited under his name. So the story goes. That may very well be apocryphal, but still a great story. Anyway, in the 70s, for a bunch of reasons, not that would get us really too far in the weeds, but the Comics Code Authority relaxed some of their restrictions on classic horror figures. So you could do things like werewolves and vampires and zombies and those sorts of things. So this meant that the floodgates sort of metaphorically opened. Like, it's not like a huge influx, but it did mean that companies like DC and Marvel could now bring supernatural sort of characters in. So one of the characters that they decided to introduce was a vampire named Morbius, and they decided to introduce that into Spider-Man, which is why Sony can make a movie about it. And so Morbius is sort of introduced as, depending on the time period and who's writing, he's either like straight up anti-hero, he's sort of like a tragic villain, that kind of thing, doing villainous things, but he was put in this situation. He fights Spider-Man a couple times, along with a character named Manwolf, who is J. Jonah Jameson's son, because comic books.
The astronaut, right?
The astronaut, yeah. I'm still waiting for that adaptation. Hmm. You know, call me, Marvel. Don't call me, I screen my calls. If you call me, please leave a voicemail, because otherwise I will not answer. I won't pick up. So initially he tussles with Spider-Man, but then he fairly quickly gets spun off into his own book for a while. It's called like Adventure into Fear. I think there's a black and white magazine that has Morbius stories in it. I don't remember the exact name of that magazine. He shows up periodically in the 90s in his own book for a brief while. And again, depending on who's writing it, he's either an anti-hero or the villain. So, but all that is a way of saying that Morbius isn't really tied to Spider-Man the way that characters like Kraven the Hunter or Madame Web are. So that's roughly the comic book. And yeah, he makes appearances, shows up in various supernatural books, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, that kind of thing. As far as the movie goes, apparently the character of Morbius was supposed to have a cameo in the first Blade movie. Reportedly, the scene is actually in the deleted scenes on the DVD, but I did not discover that until like 5 minutes before we started recording, so I didn't have time to check that. But that scene was cut. Briefly, Morbius was one of the characters that was going to be a movie when Artisan got the rights to a ton of characters and made approximately one movie. Punisher War Zones, that's something like, or maybe Punisher, right? You have to go listen to those episodes to get the details. I can't be bothered. That was very disrespectful. I obviously can be bothered, but I don't want to waste your time. Once Sony saw that Disney was printing money with the MCU, they were like, well, what do we got? And so Morbius was quickly moved up. And then they made Morbius. The end so far, I guess. I don't know. That's the backstory. Questions? Comments?
Is there any more backstory to why Morbius is the way it is? I mean, just that they rushed, did they rush production when they moved it up, or?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just...
This was them trying their hardest.
Yeah. So, I mean, not every movie can be good. I get it.
Sure.
I think it may be a very clear indication of how rare a Kevin Feige type actually is in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlie, you said this was your first time watching this?
It was.
Okay, well, that's about how I felt watching it the first time. And watching it again, I get the distinct impression that it's not so much that they just, like, screwed up on editing and writing and, you know, plotting this thing out. It's that they just don't care.
Okay.
But, like, in a good way. Like, they're not going to overly concern themselves with building some sort of puzzle box movie. It's all about the vibes.
This is a vibes-based movie, I do agree.
It is absolutely a vibes-based movie.
Before we launch in the movie proper, we should probably talk a little bit about the $42 trillion comments and things like that. So this is where I hand it off to Paul and or Doug to provide a segment of Paul Explains the Internet.
Yeah. So mostly what I remember from this was I think the first meme that kind of came about on Twitter is the It's Morbin Time meme, which read something to the effect of, the best part of Morbius was when he says, it's Morbin Time, and morbed all over those guys. Still gets me a chuckle to this day. You know, actually, I'm a little fuzzier on, like, the 42 billion or trillion or whatever. Can you help me out a little here, Doug? Do you know the origin of that one?
Not offhand.
I thought that was an Adam Gobeski original. But
Oh, that is?
No, it's not. No.
I always just heard it made up $4 billion.
Right. I think just people were in the mood for posting, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those things that took off. And I think there was something about, like, how Morbius was, like, super successful, because it very clearly was not. I seem to recall, like, multiple Twitch streams popping up that were just, like, showing the movie 24/7.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Or maybe it was, like, Discords or both or whatever. Yeah. I think it's just posting.
One thing I do remember is that the posting hit such a, like, public consciousness high that Sony did decide to re-release the movie in a bunch of theaters, and still no one went to watch it. it made like $250,000 in 1,000 theaters or something.
Yeah.
Surely memes translated to real money.
This is why we can't have nice things, by the way.
All right, here's my favorite fact on Wikipedia. Following the financial failure of the re-release, a petition was started on change.org to put the film back in theaters for a third time with the claim that, quote, we were all busy that weekend.
This time for real, guys, I promise.
Oh, by the way, now that I'm looking at Wikipedia, it was not $42 trillion. It's $353 trillion.
Oh, okay. That sounds more accurate.
We're going to have to go a few more times.
So, yeah, let's talk about the movie proper.
You know, for whatever reason, the first thing that popped into my head that I was like, I got to mention this, was like the opening scene where the helicopter lands. He spouts some fact that I did not go fact check about vampire bats and...
Oh yeah,
how much they can eat. And I was just like, oh, this is just a bat facts movie. You've been subscribed to bat facts.
My favorite part about that scene is how the helicopter pilot, like, sees him and is like, oh, do you need a doctor? Like, they haven't just spent, like, hours in this helicopter.
I am a doctor. Well, sometimes doctors need doctors. First scene kind of makes you do what you do in a lot of other movies, but you have to do a lot in this movie, which is kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. It's like, okay, well, these vampire bats are not the same vampire bats that we have in our world. Like, our vampire bats cannot lift up an entire corpse of an animal and bring it to an isolated ledge in order to devour it.
there's a very, for me at least, a very conscious, I have to turn my brain off for this movie.
Right.
Feeling.
It almost makes you think that they did that on purpose right there. It's like, no, just let's get this out of the way. You can't think about this.
I mean, I definitely didn't think about that.
There were plenty of other things to not think about.
Yeah.
So much to not think about.
How did he get 400 bats back to America after flying a helicopter there, for example? What was that weird string thing he put in front of the cave? Because the bats just seemed to fly straight through it.
Oh, yeah, they did. That's right. They didn't explain how he caught the bats. I mean, we thought that's how it's going to work.
Yeah. In their tank, or do they just swirl about in perpetuity?
Did he apologize to the helicopter pilot for sicking an army of bats on him? Would have been made for an awkward flight home.
Did the helicopter pilot survive?
Yeah.
Did he just say on the way home, he's like, hey, do you need a doctor?
But yeah, then the bats are just swirling around in that container, never landing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it really
for
it really
weeks.
That's what bats do.
I love that Martine referenced that it was super illegal for him to have like a bajillion bats there, but it was still like an open door that led straight into a hallway looking in on this ever swirling pile of bats. He made no effort whatsoever to disguise what he was doing.
Yeah, he said privacy screens on.
At the very beginning, that he something. Just, once they were turned off, they were just off for the rest of the movie, seemingly.
All right, here's one thing I will say. I'm used to Jared Leto being a real weird dude in movies. And like things like Suicide Squad and Blade Runner 2049. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised to see how he's basically playing like a normal, more or less person. Like,
yeah, it's well, almost like, weirder not, this way.
Yeah, he's not like doing like an extra weird thing or anything. Like, yeah. He's trying to be pretty relatable. I kind of appreciated that.
I haven't seen him in possibly literally anything else. Was he an American Psycho? I feel like he was like a random guy who gets murdered in American Psycho.
That's possible.
But besides that.
You sure you're not thinking of Fight Club?
Wait, was he in Fight Club?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
He's the wanted to destroy something pretty.
Oh my gosh.
He's the pretty guy.
I did not realize that.
He was also an American Psycho.
Oh, good. Was he? I think he's the guy who gets the axe to the head in American Psycho, but I do not recall.
He is 52.
All of that is to say, I had really no expectation for his acting. He felt wildly flat, and I could see blaming the material a little bit, but like, I was still entertained by Matt Smith, even though he had absolutely nothing to work with. I didn't get what he was going for.
I think he's trying. Because, yeah, I guess if you haven't seen him be a real weird dude in other movies, that doesn't read. But because I've seen him be a real weird dude, like, this does feel like a fairly controlled performance. And it sometimes feels like he is doing that to anchor the movie so that Matt Smith can be crazier as a contrast.
The one thing I'll always remember about this movie, there's a scene when he's in like a diner and he's talking to someone, and it's not particularly interestingly shot. It's just going back and forth between the two people's faces. But every time I think it's on his face, one of them, there's this character eating in the background. And I was so disinterested with what was happening that my eyes would just like fall off the character who was talking and stare at this guy in the brown suit just going to town on a sandwich in the background. Like that is exactly what I think about this movie. That I just, my eyes were unwilling.
You'd rather be eating a sandwich
in the exercise. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just there was a particular scene, I think, when maybe he first goes to meet Matt Smith as an adult, and it's Jared Leto and Matt Smith and Jared Harris just kind of like in the same room, and I'm like, wow, they all agreed to do this movie. Like, and they read the script beforehand, presumably. Okay.
So supposedly Matt Smith chose to do it because he wanted to work with director Daniel Espinosa.
Oh, okay.
By the way, our as far as the MCU goes, our second Doctor Who doctor to be in the MCU movies, but third overall, after Christopher Eccleston in Thor the Dark World and David Tennant in season one of Jessica Jones. So I assume Peter Capaldi is due. Yeah. I don't think the Suicide Squad gets him out of it.
Mm.
If you want to believe it does, then I guess Jodie Whittaker is due.
Okay.
He could be British Magneto.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about that.
He has the look. I have no idea if he would do the role well, but...
Wait, Jared Harris was in Lost in Space?
I don't remember that. One? No. Yeah, it probably would have been before I would have recognized him, so for sure.
Fair enough. We'll see. Because who else was... Dr. Smith was someone else who was a big name. Gary Oldman, I think.
Yeah, he's the aged Will Robinson. It's,
oh! It's telling me.
Anyway, back to performances, I guess. Jared Leto, at least. But yeah, I honestly... It worked for me. I was not as bored, I think, as Kevin was.
I don't know how to really put it, except it was, like, appropriate. He was doing the thing I think he should have been doing with what he had available to do. So in that sense, yeah, I liked it. Like, I wouldn't have gone more over the top, necessarily, and I wouldn't have undersold it anymore either.
I mean, I kind of wanted it to be a movie about two full weirdos, but...
I guess.
It still kind of was, I suppose.
What was Matt Smith's character's job? Like, was he rich? I didn't really understand. Yes. Okay. Because the only indication I got from that was that he went to his child hospital wearing a suit, and that I don't think it was really addressed beyond that.
The impression I got is he's more or less born into money.
Okay.
Okay. I was wondering about that. I was like, how'd he get all that money from being a... I guess I wasn't paying enough.
I was wondering if he was a gambler, because he talked about gambling the first time we see him as an adult. Like, is that it? Or
and yeah, was Jared Harris some sort of live-in nanny? I didn't understand.
He was the doctor from before, so maybe he just paid him off to come live with him.
I guess.
Well, I don't think he lives with him. He just keeps coming to, like, administer treatments.
But in the U.S.? Because... That's not where he lived at the beginning of... Was the beginning of the movie?
Well, no,
the beginning of the movie was in Greece.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Spartans.
So, right. And so then they all moved to the U.S.
Well, it's the land of opportunity, Charlie.
I don't know. It's just there's more story there that the movie doesn't feel like going into. And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it should have. Maybe it shouldn't have. Who's to say?
I think we're to say. That's what we're doing here. It was fine with me. I didn't need a whole bunch of labored explanations.
Yeah, I know.
I was happy that this movie came in under 2 hours.
Yeah,
I was actually surprised about that. When I saw, like, watch at 7, I was like, huh? We're not doing 5:30? Like, yeah, I just assumed.
I guess because, if... There's the two scenarios. There's the one where they explain everything, and believe me, I would have been complaining about that if they had gone out of their way to explain everything. And the one where they don't, where I'm just a little bit confused. I guess that's fine.
See? The best possible outcome.
As the credits roll just in gigantic letters, we're going to give you 30 minutes of your time back, and then you leave.
I am biased, though, but I do enjoy Matt Smith in this movie a lot.
He was the best part. Certainly the best character.
Which is this is a weird complaint, but it's the complaint all of us have. I just know that it is. Which is that they just arbitrarily change his name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then the doctor also decides to go along with this.
I know. I was thinking about that the whole time.
Like, it'd be one thing if Morbius was, like, the only one who called him this, and everyone else called him his real name. But no. Everyone just starts calling him Milo.
That's like from a comedy, you know? Like an absurd comedy is that the kid names him that, and then the adults start doing it too.
Which is
grim thing is, named it after the kid who dies all the time. Like, why is the doctor like, yeah, this is fun. It's another Milo. Another one on the chopping block.
If your job is to work with dying children day in and day out, you don't think that you're going to develop a bit of gallows humor there?
I feel like it's reinforcing the gallows humor of a child. Exactly. Yeah. That's... Another day, another Doug.
But the crazier thing is that this is not happening for comic book reasons. This is not a case where this character started with one name and then it was later revealed they have a different name and this is them trying to seal it. No. Matt Smith's character is a sort of composite of a bunch of, like, Morbius and related characters into one, none of whom are named Lucian or Milo. So, A, what? B, if you are going to do this, why are you naming your character a name that sounds similar enough to Michael that I occasionally get confused when I don't know which name is being said at a given time? Setting that aside, Matt Smith is great.
So to be clear, your complaint is that this movie required, in some instances, more mental effort than you felt comfortable putting forth.
Look, don't tell me to shut my brain off and then insist I use it.
Fair.
It should have been like a warning, like with 3D glasses, like, turn your brain on for this next scene.
5 short flashes at the bottom row will indicate a thinky scene.
But yeah, it's Matt Smith was great. I figured he would be, too.
Yeah, I'm not terribly surprised, but still, it's fun to see him and stuff, even if it's not the best regarded stuff. But it's not his fault.
It's his agent's fault.
Yeah. He does seem to have an agent that puts him in less than ideal movies, it seems like. Because he was also in that one Terminator movie no one remembers. Not that one, the one before it.
Mm. Wait, the one it's before funny, it?
Because I was thinking of Genesis when you said that was the one before that.
No, he is in Genesis. I'm talking about the one no one remembers.
Oh, Dark Fate. Yes.
Yeah.
Did anyone here see Dark Fate?
Oh, no.
I didn't see anything after 3.
I stopped after Salvation.
I did see Genesis, partly because Matt Smith was in it, but he does not do a lot, and it's not his best role. That's why I'm happy that he's in House of the Dragon. Gets to use his talents, be recognized for the actor of his caliber that he is.
So there were a couple of things that I was wondering whether you think they were direct references or not. Like, when he leaves the jail, and then, like, you watch his feet, and, like, his gait gets better as he's walking along, do you think that's, like, a direct Usual Suspects reference?
I haven't seen The Usual Suspects. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, that's like something specifically that happens to that. It made me think, like, that's probably what that is. And then the other one was like, are they making a Dracula reference that he's a vampire on a boat that kills everybody and then the boat shows up somewhere and they don't know what happened? And I was like, that's good. I like that.
Possibly, but that origin is, I mean, modulo moving science forward however many years is basically what happens in the comics.
Oh, okay. So
that's actually then, a decently faithful adaptation.
All right. Well, I like that.
I think the only real difference is that in the comics, the character that Jared Harris is playing is like Morbius's first victim on the boat. But otherwise, yeah. Although I did note that the boat is called the Murnau or whatever it is. The person who directed Nosferatu originally.
Oh, so. Nice.
Oh, okay.
That's a vampire reference. Speaking of not knowing how to pronounce things, why does he turn down a Nobel Prize? Like, why is that even in the movie at all?
And they don't show it.
He shows up to turn it down?
They have, like, a 10-second scene that they shoot of him in... yeah, it's just weird. Like, let's go out of our way to shoot this scene and then not show him turning down the prize and then just reference that he does.
You know what?
Like, why shoot the scene at all?
They'll figure it out. Trust our audience.
Well, speaking as someone who forgot to turn his brain off for the entire movie, I think they reference afterwards that the thing he was getting the Nobel Prize for was his fake blood, which he considered to be a failure. So it's all trying to show us that, like, he's, you know, driven by this one thing and this one thing only, and anything short of curing his disease is a failure in his mind.
Which is fine, but then why go to the
That was a little strange. I will give you that.
My question is, why shoot the scene of the ceremony and then explain what happened at the ceremony afterward instead of showing the rest of the scene where he does it?
Look, you that just could not be put like the they scene filmed in at a all. Bunch of stuff.
I guess.
And then decided we don't need this.
We need to pad this by putting the scene in. But only part of it.
Need this in a tight 90 minutes.
Actually, yeah, that's a good way to get exactly the running time you want. Here's a scene that we could cut at any length.
The little girl that he's hanging out with immediately after ditching on the Nobel Prize.
Nobel Prize. That's what I would call it in the movie.
Did they finish her story at all, or was it implied that she's just gonna die?
No, she's in a coma.
Wait, she was in a coma? When did that happen?
When they put her in one.
They gave her 100 milligrams of propofol.
I meant to ask you guys, like, do you know how much puts
someone in a coma? I don't know.
But that was the end of that story. She's in a coma now, the end.
Yeah, I think
great. So. Spectacular.
She can come back in the sequel.
Of course, the sure-to-be-made sequel.
It made $353 trillion.
That's very true. There's no money left in the world. What could it make?
Oh, that's true. So there's no money left to make it.
All the money is Morbius. The currency is now copies of Morbius.
Inflation is through the roof.
I'm going to my workplace to pick up my wheelbarrow of Morbius DVDs.
So what do people think of the vampire effects, I guess? Partially like the sunken faces and things, but also like the weird swirly CGI stuff.
I thought the faces were fine. I had nothing against them. The smoke thing was weird. And again, I get suspension of disbelief and all, but I don't know why having bat DNA gave him smoky flying powers.
Does he sense like the wind and to manipulate
these
it?
These are kinda, this universe. Vampire.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just maybe it's just a visualization of air currents.
We are just privy to the smoke.
Okay.
So when you're watching the bats in the movie and, you know, in real life, they move pretty darn quickly, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, faster than your eye can see, right? It kind of blurs a little bit, right?
I haven't watched that many bats, but I will take your premise as a given, yes.
Well, it's just a visual shorthand to show you that. Things are just moving so fast that it just blurs and it's like smoke.
How does this lead to him being aerodynamic enough to fly?
Oh, he's got hollow bones.
Hollow bones. Okay, asked and answered.
Yeah, he's incredibly light.
Sure.
I mean, that's just actual Jared Leto, though.
His density is roughly that of air. He just tends to float away.
He did that.
I will say, when he first gets his curse of vampirism and he's killing all the guys, including Corey Johnson from Kick-Ass, another henchman or hitman to get mercilessly slaughtered. But I commented to Doug and Paul when we were watching it how it felt like a PlayStation game from like 2006 or something, maybe. Morbius is picking them off one by one, and I definitely kind of got like Batman Arkham Asylum vibes, where like you're Morbius and you have to stealthily infiltrate and take out all these guards without them killing you.
There was and a bullet time like perfect dodge.
Yeah, Paul made that comment. But you get a smoke effect with it, so it looks cool when you're playing. And then I also got that vibe at the very end when he's finally squaring off with Milo, Lucian, Matt Smith. I definitely got like, ooh, final boss fight vibes.
Tap the X button to push the bats harder.
A pile of bats at him, yes.
Yeah.
Not that I'm giving it credit for this, but earlier in the movie, anytime there's like a news, you know, story on a TV, I always like to look at what like the little newsreel on the bottom is saying. And one of the things was like sewers closed off due to like bat infestation. So there was a little bit of foreshadowing to the bats in the end of the movie.
That makes sense.
Pesky sewer bats. There's so many of them, they lift the manhole covers up on their own.
Did anyone else pick up on when Milo shows up at the lab where Martine is working and he walks next to the big cylinder thing full of bats, that the bats shy away from him?
Oh, I did not. See? Great movie. Full of clever details.
Yeah, we don't like this bat guy.
Because Michael Morbius is a friend to the bats, but Milo's not.
So how far did he swim from the boat? Not to go back too far or anything.
13 nautical miles, I think.
Is that international waters?
The movie told me it was.
Yeah. I've been looking this up and trying to figure out how far from Long Island you can be.
How far into international waters? No watch list.
Yeah, I did like how the movie, I was beginning to question, like, maybe this guy's not a very good scientist at the beginning. These aren't very good methods, but then they explain, like, oh yeah, I'm not ethical, and I just have a lot of money, and I'm going to do whatever experiments I want.
I mean, it mostly worked.
One mouse trial, right to humans.
Who needs? He only had the one mouse.
Oh, it fell over. Oh, it came back up. It's doing fine.
There were over 100 trials between those 2 points.
It could have been. I don't know. Well, no, because he tells us how many.
Charlie wanted to watch all the dead mice, just like he wanted to watch the Nobel Prize thing.
What did he say in his voice memo? I want to say it was like in the tens of...
No, the first one he said is 117.
Oh, 117.
Then the human one was like 243.
Okay.
Jeez, Charlie. Perfect movie. Stop trying to bring it down. Although, for a moment, I like mixed this movie up with the first Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. And I was like, oh, there's a scene where the mouse comes back and it's like a mutated mouse and it's like terrorizing other mice and it's like a vampire mouse. And then that didn't happen. And that was sad.
Ah, dang it. I had the exact same thought.
Maybe we've accidentally switched dimensions and don't realize it.
How about the police officers? We've got Tyrese and Al Madrigal.
Yeah. Weird and unnecessary.
I kind of wanted that whole movie. Like, I want like the part two, but it's like happens at the same time. You know, like it should have come out as a separate movie.
Yeah, I wanted Al Madrigal to be a little bit more even leading into it. I like that he knew that it was a vampire right away. He's not messing around. We don't have to pretend we don't understand what vampires are. If it was in the MCU, they would have leaned into the humor quite a bit more for that.
But, you know, maybe we don't need that all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
I think
it's nice to just have a guy stick out of like a sore thumb in the movie.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
I felt like I wanted to punch his character in the face.
Why is that?
He just seems so smug and self-assured, yet completely worthless. Like, nothing the cops do is particularly useful, is it?
Well, he's right, though. Like, he actually understands what's going on.
Vampire, immediately, yeah.
Okay.
How many pints of beer can you drink? This is too much for the doctor to drink.
Yeah, when was the last time you had 32 beers?
Last Saturday.
I mean, it was from the morning, though.
Were those guys in Venom? Because they made a reference to something in San Francisco, which I assumed was supposed to be a reference to the Venom movies. Or are these just completely new characters?
Yeah, they are not in Venom, but it feels like maybe they should be.
The glue that holds the Sony universe of Spider-Man villains together.
Well, that would be worthwhile.
Didn't Morbius say that he was Venom?
He did say he was Venom.
He did say that.
Yeah, wait, he did?
Yeah, he's doing it as he changes it. So when he busts that lab to take it over and he's changing into a vampire, he says that he's like, I think they ask who he is. He's like, I'm Venom. And I had to rewind and turn on the subtitles because his voice just changes enough. And I'm like, did he actually say Venom? Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah, the subtitles, you know, kept it lowercase. right behind I've done things. You don't want to see me when I'm hungry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just kind of, yeah, it feels like there's a goofy movie in here, like, that wants to come out and does not let any opportunity from start to finish. It's like, that would have been better if they just, yeah.
Yeah, I guess my overall feeling watching this is that this is a great movie from 2006 or so, as far as like superhero movies go. Like, this is a great pre-MC, well, maybe not great, but...
Thank you.
this is the finest possible...
This is the best Morbius there can be.
Like, pre-MCU.
We all deserve.
Like, if this movie had been, like, installment 23 of the March, like, I feel like I'd be pretty happy about it.
I would say if this came out in the 90s, maybe I would cut it a little bit more slack. But by, like, 2006, you've already had first two X-Men movies. You've had the first two Spider-Man movies. I don't remember. I mean, there were some other lesser movies that came out around then, maybe Daredevil and the like. But, like, I feel like it already had pretty stiff competition by the time, like, you know, we're midway through the 2000s.
So you weren't with us in the early parts of the Murray Marvel movie March. So I don't think you can...
I know there's some bad stuff. There's some bad
I'm not sure you can. I'm just going to sound like an asshole. I'm sorry.
That's 100% fine. I understand where the sentence is going, and I will take it.
I don't think you understand in context how much of like an island of quality those movies are amidst all the rest. Those are exceptions, not the norm.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because we got movies like the 2004 Punisher, Blade Trinity, Elektra, Ghost Rider,
Stanley Hulk,
X-Men 3.
X-Men 3.
That, you're right. That was May of 2006.
Yeah.
Because I watched that the day I graduated from high school.
What a way to celebrate.
Yeah, that was something. Really symbolic of my childhood dying, though, so...
But yeah, that was a long way of saying that this has a very sort of retro feel to it in terms of like scripting and plot.
No, you're right. I mean, it feels like a superhero movie from two decades ago. That's yeah.
And a way it feels, and it feels that way too with just the locations or all for all of the scenes. Like, okay, this is a scene in a hospital. This is a scene in the hull of a boat. Here's a lab, and you're like, yeah, this is just a sewer. There's not really any very interesting set pieces in the whole thing.
Yeah, and every time it feels like there starts to be an interesting set piece, like, it stops.
Yeah.
Like, even the final, like, showdown where Jared Leto, where Morbius discovers he has the power of bats. like, that scene is over so fast. Like,
yeah,
they exchange, like, what, one punch?
Right.
And then he shoots bats at him and then stabs him. Like, okay, congrats on turning on the cheat codes on your PlayStation game. But they did my boy Milo dirty. That's what I'm saying.
One thing I did love about that final fight scene, there's leading up to the bat Hadouken. They're like fighting on top of buildings or something, and like Milo gets the upper hand, and like, oh no, like it looks like it's about to be that point where like it seems like Morbius has been defeated. But then instead of that happening, Matt Smith just comes back and like gets the upper hand again. Like there are three separate occasions where it looks like it's building up to like, you know, him crashing into the ground and the bad guy lecturing, but instead they just repeatedly had Milo just beat the out of him. Like it just it felt like it was building to a certain climax, and it just kept rebuilding to that climax like four separate times. It was phenomenal.
And then it doesn't happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is a movie for Tony. It's just about edging. I don't know if we can keep that.
Would Tony have enjoyed the gay bromantic undertones of this movie? Or is he not really into that sort of thing?
Oh, he's into that sort of thing. I just don't know how overt it needs to be.
Okay.
You know, well,
plausible deniability. Ahead. Plausible. It maintains a layer of, or a level of plausible deniability.
Look, all I'm hearing is that two guys just can't be friends in movies anymore.
Plus, you would have lost the rich relationship between Morbius and Martine.
Oh, yeah. There are women in this movie.
We have not talked about Adria Arjona, who I basically know from Good Omens. But I'm sure she's done other things. Oh, apparently she's an Andor. That's exciting. But yeah, we should maybe talk a little bit about Martine.
She's a doctor.
Is that not what Paul was about to talk about?
Well, I was just thinking about kind of later, like, she was developing a solution on her own, right? Did that happen? Like, was did she get?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay. They should have just done that. She should have just fixed it. Like,
so she
was at her computer.
Do.
Like, you know, there was a scene with her at her computer. I was like, okay, that's where this is going. Like,
no, she was just memeing.
Did she do anything in this movie, or was she mostly just damsel in distress, getting knocked out constantly, and then turning into a vampire eventually? Like, move the plot forward at any point except as bait?
She turned Dr. Michael Morbius into a vampire.
I mean, she helped him complete his science by pressing a button, right? Or, I don't know, injecting him.
She injected something into his spine.
But it wasn't like she created the bat serum. Like, literally, she, like, he told her, hey, inject this into my spine. She was like, duh, you okay? And did it. Was it implied she was part of this research? Because mostly it just seemed like she was talking about how brilliant and great he was. And, you know,
like, they do go out of their way to point out that she's not a nurse, she's a doctor.
Yes.
But they never really show her, you're right, doing doctory things. But maybe it's a credit to the movie's running time that I didn't think about that until after the fact.
Feels like there were things with her that they cut. Like, there had to have been.
Yeah, give us the Espinoza cut. 4 hours of Morbius.
I mean, she is there to advance the plot, but only very slightly. I mean, she probably could have been cut from the movie almost entirely.
I think you're right. I mean, the movie would be essentially unchanged.
Morbius has enough to defeat Matt Smith just because he doesn't agree with him.
You wouldn't have Matt Smith looking on forlornly as Dr. Michael Morbius and Dr. Martine Bancroft make out.
I cracked up so hard at that. That was so funny. Also, if she didn't have a scene where she was running away from the police, there wouldn't have been that scene in, like, the bodega where he's like, the woman in the jeans, which way did she go?
It's like, that's right.
Real descriptive, like, jeans.
What? No one wears jeans in this town.
Did she go towards the front door or towards the back? You know, one of the two.
Did a woman come through here who was not wearing a hat? The end credits sequence made me upset.
Oh my gosh.
It was so bad. Yeah. Like,
maybe
we should
talk about those. Unless other people want to talk about other themes in the movie proper. Yeah, we can move on to the after credit nonsense. Made no sense at all.
It was so bad.
Well, it made less sense the first time I saw it because I hadn't seen Spider-Man No Way Home yet.
So you thought Batman was appearing in a jail cell? Because that's the first thing I thought, and I was like, no, of course not. Of course, that's not what's happening, but...
This isn't The Flash.
Charlie, Spider-Man No Way Home, not Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh,
I realize they all have very similar names, but the multiversal Spider-Man movie I had not seen yet.
Gotcha.
Are we talking about Into the Spider-Verse?
I was going to say, for what extraordinarily little it's worth, Across the Spider-Verse gives an opening for the first mid-credit scene to make a little bit of sense.
Does it?
Yes. I don't want to discuss
Across,
it. Like,
is that the second one?
That's the second one, correct. Because otherwise, I don't know why he's magically transported across universes for un-Spider-Man related reasons, despite what
people
believe.
I mean, I kind of get that why he is, but I don't understand why he stays there and doesn't get pulled back when Doctor Strange does his fancy spell in No Way Home. The one that, pulls Venom back. Like, what the hell is happening there?
It's just because they wanted to make a Sinister Six movie, and after the runaway success of Morbius, why not throw the Vulture in there? Because, sure, the Vulture's in jail somewhere. Let's do it. Let's let him out of jail for no reason. And then he finds Morbius and makes him drive in his car to the middle of the desert.
Going at a very speedy 72 miles an hour.
Don't know what's happening, but I bet Spider-Man's involved. You want to team up? Yes, says Dr. Morbius.
Not who's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Kevin, yes. I need you to say that again, but this time Dr. Michael Morbius.
Yes.
Because for some reason, every single time, I think it might literally be every single time, they say Dr. Michael Morbius. They never refer to him as Dr. Morbius.
To
be fair, he does say, do you want to do some good, not do you want to team up against Spider-Man?
Well, he says it has something to do with Spider-Man, and folks like us should probably team up and do some good. Adrian Tomes, who at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming, at least kind of saw the error in his ways, decides that he wants to team up with a vampire to set out into the world and do, quote, good. Forgetting his family, who was supposedly the whole reason he was doing anything in the last Spider-Man movie.
Look, maybe he got some brain trauma in prison.
Look, but he is not in his home dimension. His loved ones are nowhere nearby.
Even setting that aside, just taking a broader view, what is the possible point of a Sinister Six movie that doesn't have Spider-Man in it?
What's the point of any of these movies without Spider-Man in them?
But that's
the search for more money.
Morbius made sense on some level. He's not really tied to Spider-Man. Venom, I kind of get just because Venom is Venom.
Yeah.
But after that, what are we doing here?
I mean, they're still doing it. They've got Kraven coming out soonish.
Like August, maybe?
I think Madam Web maybe sets up a spider person or two.
Oh, don't spoil.
I have not seen it, but I have, Madam Web, I have to assume. I have to assume that that was the draw of that. The draw. People moving to those movies in droves.
August 30th, 2024. Russell Crowe is in this movie?
I don't know why people keep agreeing to do these things.
Well, you can imagine they'd have to get on board with it like several years ago when it just made good sense. When you're handed a superhero movie, to just say yes.
But he's even if already you don't get in it. Thor, Love, and Thunder. Why does he need to be in another one?
Marvel probably has their lawyers show up and tell you that you're blacklisted if you say no.
But yeah, the end credits sequence made me angry. I was just kind of bored slash sad until the end credits sequence, but then just upset.
And then he gets out of jail in a completely separate multiverse. And then I guess he finds the alien technology again that he used.
Especially because in Homecoming, I was like, he didn't make the suit. The Tinkerer guy made the suit. Yeah, I had a lot of questions.
Was that still Michael Keaton's voice at the end? Like, it sounded distorted enough. And like, obviously, he had a full face mask that maybe they just kind of roughly AI'd it. I couldn't tell. I don't know.
No, I'm sure it's just ADR. I feel like we would know if they had AI'd his voice like that.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Fair.
So any moments about this movie you enjoyed that we haven't talked about yet?
The moment that we have talked about, but I didn't mention how much I loved it, was the bat punching. Basically punching somebody with a bunch of bats. I'm like, that's great. More of that.
Bat punches.
Yeah. It's goofy. It's ridiculous. It's unique.
It is unique. I've never seen a man punch someone else with bats before.
So do they just not have blood banks like we do, thanks to Dr. Michael Morbius inventing artificial blood? There's just not people donating blood like we do, like we have in our universe? And that's
probably
why
not
they,
as much.
Is that the reason why they can't just get a backdoor deal going with the American Red Cross to just feed their bloodlust instead of having to kill guilty people?
Well,
and occasionally innocent people?
I think part of the point of the movie is that Milo doesn't want to do that.
He was already one bad day away from becoming a psychopath, and becoming a vampire didn't exactly help things.
And also, as far as I can tell, this movie happens over the period of like 4 days, so there may not have been time to set up a blood bank back deal.
Their explanation is very strange and takes course over the entire movie. All right, what are the rules? Like, if he drinks artificial blood, that's fine, but it reduces the amount of time he has until the next time he needs it. But what happens when he drinks regular blood? He turns into, like, the bad vampire, but then, like, what's been solved at the end of this movie? Why is he just fine going around?
Well, Milo's dead. That's what's been solved.
Charlie. Okay.
This is why that's Martine vampire needed thing to itself. Get her solution done at her computer there.
Charlie, I was listening to this song and it told me there are no rules.
Yeah, there's this ticking clock of like, all right, he can't use this artificial blood forever. And then this is, yeah.
So I think the point is that regular blood, the red stuff, as they keep calling it, feeds his bloodlust sufficiently. And the artificial blood, the blue, isn't as effective. And he builds up like a tolerance or whatever, so that it's as the more of it he consumes, the less effective it is. So at some point it won't work at all, and he'll only have to feed on real blood. And okay. You know, there's a lot of paperwork involved with setting up backdoor blood deals. One question I did have, speaking of this sort of thing, is how did Milo just smuggle a bag of blood into the prison cell.
The worst prison ever.
I'm a lawyer. I need this blood. It's part of the job.
I need this blood as I see my vampire client. There's no relation, I assure you.
Yeah. You don't want to see him when he's hungry.
And here's your bag of blood, but I am going to put mine in a flask. Secretly.
Oh, is that what's going on there? I think
that's what that was.
Yeah.
It's like,
no,
he's
that
got
makes
that,
sense.
Yeah.
But I just was like,
but it does.
Oh, I guess he's day drinking. He's living it up now that he's here.
There was a whole side plot.
Poor Michael Morbius. His lawyer's drinking during the day.
It was unscripted. Blade. Matt Smith was just sad he was in the movie.
Blade is the day walker. Milo is the day drinker.
Well, I believe we were talking about things we liked in the movie. So bat punches. Anything else?
I thought the bats were cute. Like what little you could see them when they weren't just blurs.
I just don't feel like I got a chance to see them up close other than frozen and pinned on a slab.
Well, there's like a few spots where he's like holding his arm out and bats are like landing on it and stuff.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I like that he messes up that guy's hand and then assumes that ibuprofen and maybe 6 or 8 weeks and he'll be fine. Like, assuming he hasn't messed up his hand like for life, probably.
He's a doctor. He knows exactly how to break a hand to be temporary.
I broke it and then I set it back in place immediately.
Exactly.
I know your medical history. You will heal fine.
He is a doctor. I don't know why I thought about this in the movie, but Jared Leto has very pretty eyes.
Yeah, that's well established.
Very nice shade of blue. Yeah. I was like, oh, these are nice eyes. So as far as actual things I like, I mean, I did like that too, but that's not really movie specific.
So good casting.
Yeah. I like the little confrontation with Matt Smith and like the dude bros in the bar where he has the line about like tequila to remember, whiskey to forget or whatever. And when like the guy gets all super territorial and like he tries to smooth it over, like he orders whiskeys for them. Like I thought that was like a nice subtle touch in a movie full of subtle touches. No, but seriously, it was like a nice little scene and it made me like Matt Smith's character even more. I don't understand why he was the villain just because he's killing people, innocent people. I mean, come on.
I was actively rooting for him to win.
So, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. What's up?
You work in a hospital.
Yeah, I do.
Is it standard procedure to have lights off except for one light that comes off via motion detection?
Oh, yeah. And it's very loud clacking sound every time it comes on or off.
You got to get that LEED certification, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eco-friendly.
Is that a typical hospital style setup?
Typically, hospital lights are just on all the time. At least in our department. So when they're off, it's very noticeable.
Only one nurse in the entire hospital as well, so her body's not found until hours later.
As children walk past.
She must be tired.
Also, the idea that like he needs blood transfusions, what, 3 times a day? Is that what they established at the beginning? And he doesn't have like some sort of permanent line. They just keep on putting in a new line for him every time, and he just tears it out.
Did everyone except Kevin go? Kevin, who I assume had nothing.
I
liked.
Have jack to say.
That's
about
what I figured.
This,
yes.
Paul, what did you think about the music? I'll just say that, like the first few seconds of the movie.
Paul,
like,
what did you think? Here are my thoughts.
No, please go ahead because I don't have it. I got nothing.
The first like few seconds of the movie when it came on, I was like, "Oh, this is kind of weird." Like Vangelis by way of Hans Zimmer from Blade Runner sound to it, and then like I looked up who the composer was, and I was like, "Oh, I don't know who this is." And by the time I got back to the movie, like the music got boring again. For like the rest of the movie, there's just like one part of it near the beginning. It's like, oh, this is interesting. And then it just kind of faded into the background again.
It combined with the graphics, I feel like the ending and beginning graphics had nothing to do with the movie. No. It's just like, here's colors, and it's like an M.
Oh, yeah. You know,
it was just the letter V. It didn't even show the entire M for most of it.
I mean, to be fair, we are spoiled by Marvel movies now. They have to have very intricate intros and credit sequences.
Yeah, that's true. They really...
Movies didn't used to be that way.
But it just felt like a non sequitur. So the whole like beginning, I was just like, okay, you know, I'm pretty sure that this isn't gonna be like the aesthetic of the movie. You know?
This isn't a maybe trance movie.
Like, I was just trying to think if there was any even like, you know, some common color motifs, like maybe how like Morbius was like purple when he was jumping around, but it still isn't the same. Like,
yeah, and that weird, that going back to the first scene of the movie where it's like this weird jungle scene, and then I don't think we see green the rest of the movie.
Yeah, everything's just kind of shades of grayish black.
And blue.
Blue, yeah.
Maybe another reason it felt sort of like mid-2000s.
Yes.
Yeah. Like put on a dark blue filter over everything.
So ultimately, what'd you think of the movie Morbius? Would you cure it and let it go on to live its best life and have a good time? Or would you stake it in the chest with a poison to bats and stop it from continuing to live? I guess I'm just asking, how many times out of 10 would you morball over those guys?
Man, I thought for sure you were going to ask us how many artificial blood bags out of 10 we would give this movie.
I thought about it. We still can. I just wanted to see what would happen when I said more ball over those guys.
Whenever I saw the blue blood bags, I just kept thinking, like, man, that's precious horseshoe crab blood. He thinks he's being ethical with the horseshoe crab blood.
I just assumed it was antifreeze.
Yum. Windshield washer fluid.
Yeah. Guess I'm asking, how many artificial blue blood bags out of 10 would you give this movie? There you go.
Do you think the blood bags are blue raspberry flavored?
I hope so.
I mean, he is drinking them instead of, you know, taking them intravenously.
I assume it just tastes like pennies. Who would like to go first? Should we start with a positive review?
I should be going last, yes.
Yeah, do you want me to start with the highest number you're probably going to see of any of us?
Feel free.
I would give this movie 7 bags of artificial blood out of 10.
Jesus Christ.
That's not very friendly of you, Kevin, to say that while I'm talking.
I apologize.
And this is a very odd movie to rate because, like, on an objective level, the script and plot feel kind of like a mess. But on a watchability and entertainment level, I really feel like it delivers. Like, I definitely enjoyed my time watching it. It doesn't overstay its welcome. And, you know, it gave us plenty of fun memes. 7 out of 10. What about you, Charlie?
I've been spending the last few minutes poring over my old scores, really having trouble figuring out where I'm going to place this.
This is a harder one to contextualize.
It really is.
And I like the bat punching. I think this is definitely a movie that I would have fun just picking up and watching without context of this march, like knowing that it's not going to be good ahead of time. But I think Adam probably has the right idea to help rate this, is just to think of it more like a movie that came out pre-MCU and to look at those and kind of see how I've been rating those. So it actually kind of raises it a little bit. I think I'm going to give it 4 morbs out of 10.
4 morbs out of 10.
That's the noun for morbing all over those guys.
It's like right in line with Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I wasn't upset that I was watching this movie at any point. I had a lot of questions. I know this is objectively a bad movie, but there was some entertainment value to it. So I don't know what else to say.
Paul, counterpoint?
I don't know. It's hard to have really strong feelings about it for some reason. I think it's because of the memes. It feels like the memes created a lot of hype and buzz, and you expect it to be kind of funny bad. But it didn't really live up to that angle to me. I mean, it had its moments. it wasn't like haha bad in the way that I was kind of hoping for. So it kind of comes in the middle. I was entertained by it. It did feel like of a different time. It feels like I've been watching a lot of movies lately like that. Maybe that's a trend coming up. The early aughts are on their way back. But I think weighing all that together, I will give Morbius 6 Morbs out of 10. Needs more morbid.
Kevin, your rebuttal.
Okay. First, a point of clarification. I don't think it's going to change my score, but are we ranking on a score scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10?
I think 0. I think it's been established that it can be less than 1. Let me check.
Okay, and that's fair.
I've never gotten far. And I just said out of 10. I think 0 is a valid possibility.
That's good to know. It's not getting a 0. Rest assured. No,
I thought in one of maybe our guest ratings there was less than 1, but I
didn't
see
anything. Yeah. I was just scrolling through these as well.
There is a 1.5 for Fant Four Stick that a couple people gave, but that's about it. It looks like the lowest we've gotten.
Well, looking at my scores on the lower ends of things, I actually feel pretty good about, you know, where everything falls. I'd rather watch Men in Black International than Venom. I'd probably rather watch Venom the Dark Phoenix. And Red Sonja bottoms out at 2. So my first question is, would I rather watch Red Sonja or this? And that's easily Red Sonja. So boom, it has to be less than 2. Then I go I go over to my scoring system, which I wrote down just so I can understand like where I should be putting things. 0 is this movie is awful and probably racist. So it's not a 0. It's above that. Here's the description I'm looking at now is, I am actively angry that I wasted time watching this movie and that hatred will linger in me going forward. Movie basically has to personally wrong me to get this rating on top of being awful. Maybe the live action Avatar The Last Airbender would qualify here. So
I hear the new series is
also not
up.
Good. Oh well, that's something. I it was so bad, that movie. I haven't even tried to read anything about the Netflix stuff. I'll give it a
So Morbius or The Last Airbender then?
I am going to say that it ties at the score of 1 with a Avatar Last Airbender type. So I'm giving this 1. Not 1 Morbs, just the number 1.
Would you like to expand on specifically why, other than actively offending you? Or what offended you?
Besides, I will say, I would, this is not high praise, I would have entertained giving it a 1.5 up until, like, basically those end credit sequences. The 0.5 just being giving Matt Smith some credit, because I thought he did what he could with the material presented. But besides that, it was just, it wasn't, I mean, I think one of y'all mentioned this, it wasn't like funny bad. Like, it didn't, I mentioned this during the last Sci-Fi Shuffle episode, there's something endearing about a movie where people really try their best and it just doesn't quite work out. Like, this isn't Teenagers from Outer Space entertaining. This isn't The Room funny. This is like, it's just soulless. It's we're going to make this movie about some weird Spider-Man character that, like, most people have never heard of, and because Marvel has a pretty good track record of making good movies, hopefully we can get some of that money. Like, that was the logic. I was so ready for you to ask me to describe this movie in 3 sentences or less, because all I was going to talk about was the coked out executives that decided that this, like, pale of vomit of a film was a good idea. I feel myself getting worked up as I describe this. It's just It's a slap in the face to fans of comic book movies, because it's such a soulless cash grab. And then that end credit sequence that was like some of the worst anything I have seen just really topped it off for me. I cannot think of a lot of movies that I would watch. Like, if it was any other movie versus Morbius, I got to imagine it's going to be any other movie, at least for the time being. We can always go lower with Madam Web.
Kevin.
Yes.
Quick question.
What a
I'm ready.
Have you seen Tenet?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. I carefully curate the things that my eyes have to look at, with the exception of movies for this podcast. So
it's our chance, guys. Yeah. Have you seen Fant Four Stick?
I have not. Like I said, I think I was going to be on that episode, but got sick or my kids got sick or something. So I have missed out on the bottoms until pretty much this.
All right. I'll finish it off. I would rather watch a lot of other movies before this, but I'd rather watch this before a lot of other movies. This is, in my opinion, an enjoyable turn off your brain and not care about the actual movie. Like, if you're just there to watch, like, vampires fly around and not make sense and just wait for all the Matt Smith scenes to come up, this movie does a reasonable job. I'm not nearly as actively angry as Kevin about this, and I think that's because I just didn't care. But in not caring, it let me just enjoy what I was being presented. And I didn't find myself getting angry at it the way I got angry at Fantastic or angry at the 2004 Punisher or angry at Rise of Skywalker. Those are probably about the worst movies I've seen. But then I'm also in Charlie's boat where, like, just trying to put this in context with the other movies. Like, my gut feeling was just sort of like, it's like a 7 as far as, like, turn off your brain and watch movies, like, 7 level enjoyment. But I don't know that this is better than, like, the 2005 Fantastic Four or the 2008 Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton Hulk. So I'm just going to give it a 6.5, 6.5 blood bags, artificial blue blood bags out of 10. So 6 of those are artificial blue blood bags, and the half one is that blood bag being morbed all over someone. Really weird movie. Objectively, I can say this is a very formulaic, not terribly exciting movie, but it's exciting enough that I can turn my brain off and enjoy it and not have to worry. Oh, maybe that's actually another thing, is that other than the end credit scenes that I agree with Kevin 100% are pure garbage, It's nice to have a movie that does not require me to have seen basically any other movies to enjoy. I don't need to know what happened in the last 16 MCU movies or who any of these, like, particular characters are. You know, it's just like, hey, here's a movie. Please watch it. Please give us the money so that we can make money because capitalism. And you know what? Good enough. 6.5 out of 10. Where was I going with that? Oh, I appreciate that I didn't have to do my homework to watch this movie. That's what that was. Yeah, 6.5 out of 10.
I'm looking now at the march and trying to figure out what movie. I know you've calculated this at some point, Adam, has the largest spread in ratings. This is probably up there.
Doug is the one who calculates.
Oh, that was Doug. Sorry, Doug. Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
But it's probably between this and Red Sonja.
Maybe Venom. Oh, no, that's only 5.5, where there's a 6 spread in Red Sonja, 2 versus 8.
Yeah, well, this one has a 1 versus 7.
Ties.
Thanks for flexing the ratings, Kevin. Keep insane.
Happy to bring things down. Yep.
We've been keeping it a little too tight. You know, it's good to kind of flex the bottom end of the rating system.
No, for sure. No, I agree.
So, yeah, thanks, everyone, for joining us on installment 77 of the Merry Marvel Movie March. And I forgot to mention at the top, we're actually in Merry Marvel Movie March Madness right now. That means our next episode is also Merry Marvel Movie March. We're going to jump forward a whole month to May 6, 2022, to a movie I've been looking forward to discussing because I want to know what people like Doug and Paul think about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Basically, I want to know what people who didn't watch the Disney Plus shows think of this movie.
Ah.
So, looking forward to that discussion. And if it's comprehensible or not, or somewhere in the middle.
I'm happy that I'm specifically, it's a good thing for me to not do any homework for.
We need you to continue to not watch these things before you see this movie, Paul.
I mean, I guess you're welcome to if you want, but
I'm going to take it as an opportunity to remain ignorant.
Probably the best way.
How often do you get that?
Fair. Anyway, I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Thanks to our three guests who've been morbid all over the place the whole time. We've got Doug Gobeski.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin Vredevoog.
This episode made me angry and sweaty.
And Paul Wilcox.
No.
Oh, Milo.
It was a pleasure.
like how there was a long pause. We were like, why did he just yell no at me?
I wasn't sure if my sign off was unacceptable and I had to do it again.
Unacceptable.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. Make sure to check out GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
We've got lots of exciting opportunities for you to entertain yourself there.
Oh, I thought you were talking about job opportunities.
The job opportunities we have don't pay, so they're really more of unpaid internships. And you can follow us on Twitter, at GWReport, and you can like us on Facebook. So if you're looking for an internship, talk to Charlie.
An unpaid internship that gives no letter of recommendation. Just the satisfaction of a job well done.
But you can stay at Charlie's house.
All right.
Complete side topic now, but I was watching this YouTube video. It's like actors perform like historical like letters to each other. And there's one with it's like an invading army and the like city they're defending. But it's Peter Capaldi and Matt Berry. And so good.
Oh, God. Matt Berry is the exact same in everything he's in, but it's perfect like 90% of the time.
Yeah. And so Matt Berry does it like Matt Berry.
Of course. Yeah.
And Peter Capaldi does it like the doctor, like Peter Capaldi, basically, when he's not being Malcolm Tucker. So, yeah, it was amazing. I'll have to find the link and put it in the blog. So it means you can't cut this.
Ah.
What are we talking about?
Doctor Who's.
That would be.
Oh, obvious. Yes. The Doctor's Who.
Doctor's Who, yeah.
Doctor's Who Morb.
Doctor's Who.